Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's Tuesday, July 13, 2021. I'm Ash Bennington. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. Here's some of the stories we're looking at. CPIU, Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers, is up a red-hot, unadjusted 5.4% year-over-year. That's 0.9% for June. Is it low base effect? Is it transitory? We dig in to find out. U.S. equity markets shrugged off this morning. CPI data up at record highs, then cooled down in the afternoon. There's a 30-year bond auction to talk about in there. Looks like the S&P is still bouncing around a little, but settling down. Looks like 43.69, off about 0.35% on the day after lots of Sturm und Drang. Finally, it's earnings season. The estimates look blistering. Q2 21 earnings growth rate for the S&P 500, 64% based on estimates from FactSet. If they match or beat those numbers, it will be the hottest quarter since Q4 2009. Here to talk it all over with us once again, Tommy Thornton. Tom, welcome back.
Ash, great to be back. Love coming on the Daily Briefing on Tuesdays.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you here. We were talking a little bit off camera, lots of stuff happening in this market. It seems like a Tommy Tuesday is always a busy day. What are you looking about? How are you contextualizing all of this information?
Well, we had a few different dramas happen today. We had the CPI came out, and I was thinking this was my thesis going into it today, and it sort of partially worked. I bought some banks. I figured, you know what, I don't like the way the charts necessarily look, but I felt like there was enough evidence that they could push a little higher for trades. CPI came out, and the earnings were fine. Goldman and JP Morgan, they were fine. There was some squishy thing. Lending still's kind of, but CPI came out. It was just a ripping hot number, and it reversed everything in the markets. And then the bond market didn't get the CPI numbers. It just, it ignored it. It was like you didn't notice, but the front end of the rates went up, and then the back end, long end, went down a little. And then
what are the maturity points you're looking at for that, Tommy? Where on the curve are you looking?
Well, the 2 and 5s were, the rates were up, and then the 10 and 30s were down. And, you know, the narrative of this market of late has been low rates helping big cap tech and speculative type ideas. And that was totally true today. And I also shorted some tech yesterday. So my whole narrative was we're going to have a, you know, growth type reversion. Rates would go up, financials would be okay, and tech would sell off. Now, I kind of bailed out here because the 30-year auction was just atrocious, and it was just a nightmare. But before we get into that, I just want to say that one of the things that's been happening over the last several weeks, and there's a lot of people like Jason at Sentiment Trader and Andrew Thrasher, a really good technician. We've all been seeing these divergences that are starting to happen in the market, and it's fewer new highs in the market. I mean, we hit new highs in the S&P today, and there were only 40 new highs out of the 500. And you're seeing fewer stocks above the 10-day moving average, fewer stocks above the 50-day moving average, and that's a bit of a divergence. You don't necessarily want to see that type of action when you're hitting all-time highs. then so, the so, breadth. So basically,
oh, just to contextualize this for people, so what we're talking about is stocks near at or near record highs all time, and yet you have fewer and fewer stocks participating in this updraft. In other words, fewer and fewer stocks are reaching their 52-week highs as we're at all-time highs in the market.
Yeah, and we've had this. This has been happening for a while, and a lot of people have put out the chart of the top eight stocks that have done all the work in the last 3 months. And that's absolutely true. You've had this, you know, the mega cap stocks that have their runs at times. And if you go back 10 years and you run the data on Bloomberg, if you run NDX, index, MOV, and then change the dates, you can see the attribution of those top five stocks, the Apples, Amazons, Microsoft, Google, and I forgot the last one. Google, Microsoft,
Facebook.
Bingo. Two letters. It screwed me up. Anyway, the point is that we've had this. The 30-year bond was the auction was terrible, and from my people that I talked to all day, they one said, "Look, I think that the dealers were." They gave them about $1 billion, maybe a little bit more, that they had to swallow, and that was a lot more than the previous month. So that's why.
Let's explain that a little bit.
Our yields went up. Go on.
Yeah. I was just going to say, let's explain that a little bit for people who don't know the bond markets. They're bidding at a fixed percentage, and then their allocation gets determined. So they have to swallow a greater allocation based on their bid when the numbers move.
So here's the. The 30s came in at 2%, and that was, I think, a little higher. And the tail bid of 2.4 basis points. The dealers took 22% versus 19%, the 2021 average. The indirects take 61% versus the 62% average. Directs take 17% versus the 19. So it's really, bid cover was 2.19 times versus 2.32, the 21 average. It's really the dealers that were puking it today, and that's generally what they do. They'll participate in the bond auctions and then, you know, do something with it immediately right after because they don't want it on their balance sheets. That's kind of what they do. They just create liquidity with it. So that was a surprise. It also sent the tech stocks down quickly. And so that whole reversion that I was hoping for with tech stocks going down, it worked. Rates went up. It worked. And last week I shorted bonds. I didn't have a lot of people that thought that was a really smart idea. But I've been noticing on the daily sentiment index, the equity, bonds, and crude, three very important macro markets, the bullish sentiment has been over 80% bulls. And that this is a daily poll that we track. And I've rarely seen stocks, bonds, and crude all above 80%. And I put out a note last week saying something's got to give. And I think that it's going to, I mean, we could have a lot of things that give. It could be all three that start to sell off. And, you know, you have a bond market selling off and a stock market selling off. That's a rather scary proposition for a lot of people. So I think it's a stretched market. We, you know, I've seen a lot of DeMarc signals in the NASDAQ for the last 2 weeks. And that's been really, really painful because they just haven't turned. And maybe today was the first day, but I've had these one hit wonder days and it's very, very persistent.
Let me just backfill a little bit here for people who aren't as familiar with the bond markets as you are, Tommy. What we're talking about here is U.S. Treasury today had a 30-year bond auction, $24 billion. They take the bids in. Obviously, demand is weakening higher than expected yields. What we saw here is a jump on the 30-year yield from approximately, I guess we were at around 197 basis points, and it jumped up to looks like about 2.05 on the 30. So rising yield, weakening price, lower than expected demand. And as you described, then more liquidity hitting the market from the primary dealers.
Yeah, one way to participate in that is you can short the TLT. I think that's a fairly easy way to do it if you don't trade bond futures. But I think there's still more downside there.
That's the iShares 20 plus year bond.
20 plus,
ETF.
I like that one more than the 10 year, which is the, I have it on my other screen. Hello. 10 year is the, not LQD, live TV, IEF. Thank you, Brain. So that's, I like shorting the long end of the curve better right now. I think it's, we could have something really significant. And the other thing is the dollar went up today. And that was something that, that's been something I've somewhat expected. And it's up a lot. I mean, this was a big move for the dollar today. And I think that there's the possibility if we can break through 93 on DXY, more importantly, 94, we could see a real risk-off move. Because I think there's so many people that have had this, we're going to be in a giant inflation problem, the Fed's printing money, and they've just positioned themselves that the dollar is going to go to 70 or the dollar index is going to go to 70 from 90. And yeah, maybe, but it hasn't happened. And I think that those people are really finding it difficult. So let's talk about the CPI.
Looks like we're at, by the way, I should say, 92.79 on DXY US dollar index, up a bit here on the day. Looks like starting out around 92. So, a reasonable move there, about 50 basis points in DXY.
Yeah. So a couple things about the CPI. And the market is fully on board with the transitory Fed rhetoric of that's their thing. And I think that I'm a little bit more in the middle, but I think that this is very compelling of what we saw today. So in this CPI, it showed about 55% of the month-over-month increase came from six components: used cars, rental cars, vehicle insurance, lodging, airfares, and food away from home. And that's up from 52% from the last month. And if you include energy prices, it goes up to 66%. Now, let's take that in. A lot of people are saying, well, we're not going to see used car prices going up like this forever, but I don't see really any sign of it abating because we have this chip shortage, and it's been very, very difficult for car dealers to, produce new cars. And we've already had Ford and a couple others give some concerning guidance. But look, used cars, rental cars, this is all the reopening. Everybody's dying to get out there. It's been really hard to get a rental car. And there's fewer rental cars out there also because you had a lot of rental car sales into the higher demand for used cars. And Hertz is, still a messy company, and that's difficult. There's a great car service that I use called Silver Car. Have you ever used it?
I have not.
The Audi owns them, and they only rent like silver Audis, like the A4. And it's great. It's really? Really good service, and it's not very expensive. But they just closed in LA, and I was going to LA. I was like, wait, where are you?
So hey, Tom, let me point out. We're talking about this. You're talking about energy. I'm looking at the charts here on BLS. This is the Bureau of Labor Statistics that reports CPI. And I'm looking at the 12-month percent change on Consumer Price Index. And it's so interesting that we were talking about this, ex food and energy. 12-month change on food is 2.4%. We've been talking about food prices rising, but it's really energy up 24.5% year over year. So 10x the push on food. And then when you look at that, ex food and energy, total 4.5% 12-month year over year change.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't think that the data really collects the true cost of food increases. And one thing that I think is also happening, and I've talked to a few suppliers of food and also a lumber yard recently, they have had to buy a lot of product, a lot of inventory, and they had to pay up for these high prices. They're not lowering their prices like lumber prices are cut in half now or more. And corn's been down, wheat's been down. And as you remember, I was really, I shorted wheat, I shorted corn, I shorted soybeans at the highs, and I've covered them and they were good trades. But they're keeping prices high at the retail level because they have to work that off. And that's not going to come down for a while or, you know, maybe all the way back forever.
But and aren't those numbers always sticky upward? My mother, Tommy, who follows you on Twitter, is not a markets person, but she's an incredibly savvy shopper and always points out that whenever you hear something going up in price because of input cost increases, they never come down when those input cost increases decrease.
And then it's the shrinking. They shrink the the wrappers and the size of your candy bars and everything else.
Right.
You know, you get like a yogurt and it used to be, you know, 12 ounces and now it's six and it's the same price. And, you know, they're smart and people will still buy it and it doesn't really matter. But I think that those six things, they will come back down in the coming months. And I think also as we go through the summer, you're still going to have rental car demand. You're still going to have used cars that are still going to be bought and at high prices. And if you go and you look at some of the used car sites, it's ridiculous how expensive they are. And on the collectible side of used cars, and I'm a big car person, so if anybody goes to bringatrailer.com, it's like one of the most well-known used car thing for cool classic cars or very nice, you know, Porsches and Mercedes and really fabulous cars, but they have about 300 cars at a time on auction, and the prices for used Porsches and Mercedes and others, it's obscene. It's just, it's gotten carried away. So people are just buying like crazy, similar to the way they're buying stocks in the market. I think it's just, it's gotten nuts.
Yeah. I mean, it's a question though about the sort of transitoriness of this, right? And that is not just with inflation, but also all kinds of consumer goods, all kinds of things like used cars. Everybody obviously wants to jump in a car, go down to the beach, go down to the shore, get the hell out of wherever they spent the last 14 months or so. But is that something that's a durable trend, or is that something that is just a, you know, a strict function of this reopening trade, and does it back off, and how do you price it?
Well, you're already seeing a lot of the reopening, we've talked about it, the reopening trade stocks, the airlines, the travel sites, the hotels, casinos, those have already faded well off the highs. And perhaps you're going to see another bounce with those as they start to report. I think people are already starting to price in that they will peak, but you have something like TripAdvisor. And that was in the, like almost $60, and now it's just under $40. I kind of like that as an idea to, you know, look at buying. And we talked about it. It was up 50% over the high of where it was pre-COVID. So it's come down off of those crazy highs. But I still think that they're going to have great numbers. I think all these sites are going to have great numbers. The guidance is going to be a little, you know, difficult to absorb if they do see a fall off.
Yeah.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Tell me, one of the things that you talk about that I find really intriguing is the growth to value ratio with DeMarc signals. Tell us what that's telling you right now and why it's significant.
So sometimes I find charts that are out of the ordinary, and I find ways of creating ratios of different things. And I get accused on Twitter quite often of chart crimes, but quite frankly, I've done this long enough to know, and I've used DeMarc indicators, which are a trend exhaustion indicator. So when you have a red 13, just for example, or green 9, and we can get into it more at another time. But when you start to see those things happen at certain inflection points, especially after a big move, it's kind of telling you something. So we've had, since it was last August, that the growth trade started to fade and the value stocks started to come on board. And then it was the energy, the financials, materials did exceptionally well. And it was all they were pricing in the reopening, in my opinion. And then it stopped. And we had this, that stopped recently. And I think it was also due to the rates coming down. But now I'm getting DeMarc exhaustion signals for the growth side of it versus the value side. So I'm more interested in looking at the possibility that the growthier names are going to revert and the value names and sectors will start to come on board and work. It may not, I mean, everything in the market is very, very overbought, but on the indices, I should say. So the risk is not necessarily saying, good, let's go, lever up, 3x on energy stocks here or financials, but let's just start trading some of those as a ratio trade against some of the growthier stuff. And again, we have a bunch of DeMarc exhaustion signals on NASDAQ stuff. And, one of the things when you see those signals, the rule of thumb is that you should see some response on the other side within 12 days. And we've seen them. Some of the moves aren't necessarily, they're not going to be 1987 crash type scenarios. And that's unrealistic for a lot of people to think that. But you can get a 4 or 5% pullback. And if you're in a buy the dip type market, those can work real well.
Yeah. Thomas, we come up here on the 20-minute mark. I wanted to throw to a clip. This is Jack Farley. Today, actually, on our investment ideas show on the essential tier for Real Vision. I thought this was an incredibly interesting piece. We have Jack talking with Chase Taylor of Pinecone Investments, talking about whether fossil fuels are profitable in the age of ESG. Let's take a look at the clip.
When it comes to oil, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a supply and demand story. For me, to me, it's been more of a demand story because that's where everyone's getting it wrong or has been getting it wrong for the last year or two. I think we are sort of hitting a kind of a peak green bubble, ESG bubble type of a scenario where I think people are extrapolating a little too much and not doing enough work on like the underlying here. So at the end of the day, we need to use oil. We need to use all fossil fuels for a lot longer.
So there you have it, Chase Taylor with a counter narrative, seeing an ESG bubble strength in oil. He goes on to make the bull case for the rise of oil in the context of Southeast Asian development. Interesting stuff now available on the essential tier. Tommy, what were you just saying before we came back from break?
Well, I want to mention one thing about the rise in oil prices. We talked about it last October, and when we were starting to realize that Biden was going to win, one of his things, his mandates was to, really put a clamp on oil drilling for the environment. And that is absolutely the most bullish thing you could absolutely ever hear a president say. It's the counter to what Trump said, because he wanted to drill, 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 and he did. And prices went down. So I knew that that was going to be a really bullish event of what was going to happen. Some of the ESG stuff with Tesla batteries and electric vehicles, it's still early with the true adoption of electric vehicles. I'm not just saying with the first adopters with Tesla, and there's a lot of them, but I think with the people that are going to buy just the more basic Fords, Kias, the Toyotas and others, in Europe especially, the Volkswagens, just for having a nice car and not necessarily having a real hot rod. So I think that we're getting there. So I think energy market's going to stay with us. There's a lot of things that we use for petroleum that we can't live without, regardless of using it for transportation.
Tommy, looks like we've got about two pages of questions that have come in. Only a few minutes left here. What do you say? You want to do a speed round, see if we can get a couple of these answered?
Yeah, no math. I was told no math on this one.
No math on the pop quiz. This one comes to us from Mark. If the market can brush off a large CPI like this, what else is already priced in?
Well, I think we could probably price in nuclear war. This market is so resilient. it bounces back on every little, you know, negative headline or something bad happening. You know, the problem that will happen in this market is we're just going to run out of buyers. We're just going to run out and it's going to be exhausted. And it could be some, you know, big cap tech stocks that start to have margin pressure or exhibit some slowness. You know, we've already seen around the tech sector that PC sales are starting to slow a little bit. They're starting to peak. NVIDIA's chips their chipsets for graphic boards are starting to become more available, and they're not jacking up the prices on those. So, you know, we could start to see that type of action put a bit of a peak in the market. So keep going. Let's go.
Okay, here we go. Here's one from James. This is a really interesting question. Tom, what's an acceptable max drawdown for you on a monthly basis for your personal account? And what was acceptable when you used to work at a hedge fund? So this is kind of a bigger picture question. How do you think about that? When do you start to trim losses?
Well, I'm very diversified. That's the most important thing. I'm always long short. And if my longs aren't working, my shorts are working. Sometimes you have to just prune them as the flowers bloom and take profits when you can. My max downdrafts, I've been personally down 20-30%. That was quite a while ago. With the hedge fund, we were really, really steady. And I think our biggest drawdown was something like 6% in a month. And that was, we got caught out in some catalyst, the stock that went against us, and we had a big position. It was just really, you know, unfortunate, but we came back. It wasn't that bad, but yeah, I don't like to take, I limit my losses pretty quickly now.
Yeah. Here's a question that I know the answer to, Tom, because of something that you said to me just before we went on air. The question is, does Thomas do any options or does he only trade physical stock?
I trade a lot of options and I trade futures and physical stock and anything I can. But I do trade a lot of options. I trade a lot of options around my positions. So one of the things that I will do if I'm short XYZ and I shorted it, it's at $30 and I shorted it at $35, I may sell puts against it at the 25s and just try and collect income. If it does go down, I'm out of it and with a nice profit. So I'll trade around both longs and shorts. That's what I do all the time. And I trade put spreads on Tesla probably every single day.
Yeah. Here's and a related.
Sometimes call spreads too. Don't tell anybody. Well, don't tell the Tesla people.
Your secret is safe with us. Here's one that comes to us. Very similar question, actually, to the max drawdown question. What is the maximum position size you would allocate with your capital, 10% higher or lower?
I usually try to stay within 15% on a within a sector. I usually will start with a 1% size position, and I can run it up to 5%. And I will average down if I'm wrong, if I still feel confidence in what I'm doing. Everybody always has that, oh, don't ever average down. Well, I do, and I keep it within range. And if it still doesn't work, I'll exit the position, and it's not going to necessarily change my life, my month of performance. That's just my personal style.
Yeah. Here's one from screen name Golan Heights. Is Tom still short wheat? It's keeping me up at night.
No, I covered it. I covered wheat, and I made that really clear a couple of times, a little further back on the Real Vision daily briefing, and I put it out on my site. Everything is on there. So, yes, I covered it. I'd like to reshorted if it does bounce a little bit more.
Mm. Here's one from Ralph Humphrey, another soft commodities question. Does Tom still have an opinion on coffee prices?
Well, there's been a lot of talk on coffee of the Brazilian drought, and coffee prices have not increased since that. And I think that we've seen the peak in coffee for this run. But I did get coffee at a good price earlier on and ran it up, and it was great. If anyone has never traded coffee futures and they need excitement in their life, coffee futures, exceptionally fun. Jared Dillian, true story, he's going to like kill me for saying this, but he bought a new Corvette, okay? Just, it's like, and his license plate is Dirt Nap, because his letter is the Daily Dirt Nap. Dirt Nap, yeah. But he hit me up and he goes, dude, I just made so much money trading your coffee long. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Send me my percentage. But I think he bought that Corvette with my coffee trade. So cheers to Jared. He's a great guy.
Here's a great question to end on. Comes to us from Richard M. Any risks when JP, he's talking about Jay Powell, starts to talk later in the week?
He starts tomorrow and Thursday. He speaks in front of Congress. It used to be called the Humphrey Hawkins testimony, I believe.
Yep.
And, I think he's going to stick to script. That would be the most logical thing. But if he does sort of say something a little bit hawkish, I can't say the word because that scares everybody, but it could be something to watch. And I honestly think that he should, because if he can just deflate, not pop the bubble in some of the more extreme areas in the market, I think that would be a smart thing to do and just sort of keep everything rotating, takes pressure off of him. I think it would be the right thing to do for him, but nothing's going to be done, in my opinion, until Jackson Hole next month.
Yeah. Talking of sticking to script, Tom, we're at about 4:30 here. Final thoughts, final takeaways for the audience.
I think that right now we're at a very important area where we have stocks, bonds, and crude all at very elevated sentiment. You have the market is fully invested right now. If you look at the chart of the last 10 years of inflows versus the first half of this year, the first half of this year is a lot more. So if those people start to go underwater this year, I think it could get a little deeper out there. So I'm really cautious right now. I want to see how earnings are. There are places to buy. I did buy some financials. I'm down a little, but I feel okay. There are trades. I think we'll see better action throughout the week. So that's it right now. I'm really cautious. I want to see a pullback that's actually meaningful to get in there and buy some stuff.
Tom Thornton, this is always one of my favorite shows of the month.
Same. Love hanging out with you.
Thanks for joining us, and thank you for watching, everyone.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.